You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show... What is on today's show anyway? I know. You don't know how to read. Neither do your kids. We're going to fix that in a hurry with somebody who will take you back to the days when your principal used to say, I'll shave my head if you read a book. Plus, grilling that steak on your backyard barbecue could kill you. Let's meet the friends. Drinking from a hermetically sealed bottle of filtered spring water, it's the host of Sweet Life, our producer, Brooke Peterson.
Brain-eating amoebas could be coming to a faucet near you, Phil.
Ooh, brain-eating amoebas. Hey, and we have a new friend who's really an old friend in radio, TV, sports, and more for 40 years. It's Jeff Kowalczyk.
Hi, Phil.
Hey.
What will happen first in Los Angeles? Getting an NFL team or getting the Olympics again?
Think about that for a minute. We'll get back to you. If you listen to this program on iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment and a five-star review. You're helping the show by doing that because the folks over at iTunes, they read your comments and they notice the five-star reviews. They notice the one-star reviews, too, but you didn't hear me mention that's even possible.
We don't have any of those.
No, leave a five-star review. And subscribe. Thank you very much. All right, let's get things started. So, Brooke, nice to see you, as always. Brain-eating amoebas. Do we need to know any more than that?
Probably not. That's enough for me.
Yes, I'm out.
Yeah. Well, apparently in Louisiana, right outside of New Orleans, as it so happens, they have discovered a brain-eating amoeba that has killed two people in the past 2 weeks.
So this is not just like comic book brain-eating amoeba. This is the real deal. People are dying.
Yes. This is an amoeba that somehow, if it is able to get inside your nose, will crawl into your brain. And then from there, you know, you've got about... Your days are numbered.
All right, so get into your nose. These are guys drinking tall, cold glasses of water out of the tap with mustaches. They get their mustache wet, and the amoeba crawls up the mustache, which is connected to the nose hair, in the nose, into the brain. Bammo, dead.
Well, I don't think that's exactly how it's happened. One of these victims is a girl. The other one is a 14-year-old boy. What they're saying is that you
neither
cannot...
with mustaches.
No
is what
mustaches
you're saying.
There. No.
So there goes that theory.
Ex-nay on the mustache.
Yeah. Hey.
So they're saying that you cannot get it from drinking, but you can get it from if the water does somehow go up your nose.
The tap water's coming out of your shower.
Yes, exactly. So it's not impossible to get this from your home. It does seem, though, that so far the infections have come from swimming in infected waters. And so now the entire parish of St. Bernard in Louisiana is doing a 60-day chlorine burn to eradicate this amoeba. I can't even pronounce its name.
And now everybody's eyes itch.
You know what? It's better than a brain-eating amoeba.
Than dying.
I'll take the eye itch.
Man. And you gotta take a shower. You got to take a bath or something like that.
Yeah.
And then people jump in the nearby pond, and there are electric geckos in there. And then you get electrocuted in the pond. So that's what you have to worry about, water. Just don't go anywhere near water anymore.
Well, this is the thing. It's not like it's rural America. This is right outside of New Orleans.
Sure.
This is
a
high population.
Have you been to New Orleans?
I was born in New Orleans. Thank you very much. I was.
Do they still open up the little traps in the cobblestone and dump their trash into into the little sewer water thing? That
are you talking medieval times?
That supposedly takes the water down to the ocean, I guess, to somewhere, to the bay, and dumps all the trash in the bay. Oh, to the tanks.
Their personal tanks.
And alligators live in there.
And amoebas.
Yeah. Do they still do that? Do they still use piss pots in New Orleans?
I don't know.
No?
I moved away when I was very, very young. I didn't have time to survey.
Probably a good thing.
No. Yeah, maybe so.
You'd be working in one
Mom,
of those
thanks,
funny
Dad.
Clubs there that you can see down there in the district or whatever it's called.
I love New Orleans, actually.
Do you? Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Good. Have you been on the what is it, the witch tour? No, not the witch tour, the voodoo tour.
Oh, did I take a voodoo tour? I think I took a graveyard tour.
Ooh.
All their graves are, you know, above ground because the water table is so high.
Sure.
And
there's the crocs
so
down there.
So eerie and beautiful.
Yeah. They've got gators everywhere.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Moving along. Brain-eating amoebas. That's all you need to know. Just stay away from the tap water if you're in New Orleans. But back into the water, this time the ocean. Is that where we're going?
Yes, this is so cool. Okay, first of all, for everybody listening out there, you have got to find your way to our fun page to see this video. This video is of a 13-foot translucent sphere, gelatinous kind of soft jelly-looking thing in the ocean off the coast of Turkey. The divers have no idea what this is, where it came from, what it could mean or be or turn into. They approach this thing very cautiously. The video, you can see this sphere. It sort of grows and you sort of get the scope of it.
It's a blob.
It's a blob. It's a translucent jelly-like blob, 13 feet big.
Can you eat it?
No. I wouldn't want to. I
mean, just got
to
check, you know.
I just want to, like, take a little pin and just, like, sort of poke it.
Yeah, but that's what you got to wonder. With something floating around like that, where are the sharks and the other predators? You'd think that would be, that's like the Sunday brunch buffet, isn't it?
Well, you'd think, because actually, there is a scientist who suspects that this is a huge squid egg mass. So, yeah, you'd think it would be
squid egg mass.
Yeah, like caviar for the
right
for the fish.
No, that's kind of like the sharks will come to worship at the squid egg mass, and then they'll wait a moment, then they'll take the sacrament.
Yes, but this thing is beautiful, and it's creepy and eerie, and it's just, and apparently, if this actually is what they think it is, it's so rare to be found. It's normally in very much deeper water,
yes.
And these eggs hatch in like 3 days.
Oh, so the blob's only around for a few hours.
Yeah, the window of time of seeing this is so limited that it's hardly ever been seen, let alone captured on video.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's on the show fun page, and it's called The Thing.
The blob of Turkey.
Right. Gosh, it's amazing.
So
cool.
Check
that out. All right. Very good. Let's see. How are we doing? Oh, we're good. We got another story for you. We're going to stay underwater. And I always wonder about this. If you're scuba diving or snorkeling and you see something shiny, can you keep it?
Jackpot!
Yeah, what's going on?
There is a family in Florida who is apparently are a family of treasure hunters. Like, there's five of them. They all do this regularly together as a family. And they were out treasure hunting. This is off the coast of Florida, north of Miami. And they struck gold. They found
doubloons
from a sunken Spanish armada that dates back to 1715.
Wow.
Yeah. So and it's official. It's the real deal. They say it's about $1 million worth of gold artifacts, and they don't get to keep all of it.
No. Who gets it? Spain?
This is interesting. I didn't know how this stuff works, but apparently, so these people subcontracted an agreement to basically treasure hunt here from a company. And this company bought the rights of this area from another treasure hunter years ago.
That's like a gold claim.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how international waters, how far off the coast you have to be in international waters.
It depends. When they were down there and they found the gold, were people also playing slot machines?
I don't think so.
That's how you know if you're in international waters. There's gambling going on.
I'm there.
But who gets to keep it?
Okay. Well, apparently, the state of Florida, this is under federal and state law, will take possession of up to 20% of it to display in a state museum.
Hmm.
That's what they say. And then at that point, the company and then the Schmidt family will then split the remainder. But it doesn't say if it's an equal split. It might be 80-20, 60-40.
Wow.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's still more money than they came to the party with.
True that. And now they are an official treasure-finding family.
Good. And then they could make the rounds, write a book, and all of that sort
there
of thing.
You go.
So, you know.
Yeah.
They're
set.
Run a little video, make some YouTube money.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, be a guest on this program. There you go. We can get to work on that.
Absolutely. I should call them.
You should. As the producer of this program, you should.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good. Now, I'm going to guess that based on what we've seen over the last 20 years, at least 20 years, since the Rams and the Raiders left Los Angeles, it's just amazing to think that Los Angeles, the number two market in the country, New York's number one, L.A.'s number two, and I don't know, Pacoima is number three, that there's no NFL team in Los Angeles. Now, Los Angeles made a bid for the 2024 Summer Olympics and lost to Boston.
Boston.
They don't even have summer in Boston, do they?
I don't think so.
No.
I'm pretty sure they don't.
No, but one of these things is not like the other, obviously. I just got thrown to Sesame Street in a hurry. But Jeff, at the beginning of the show, pose the question, what will Los Angeles get first, an NFL team or the Olympics? And you'll find out next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, sorry, we were just watching the video of that squid egg blob floating around in the ocean.
I mean, am I right?
Oh, it's amazing. It really is. Go to the show fun page and check it out. There's so much more there, too. Not to mention ladies in various levels of undress. I don't know why that happens, but they tend to make it on that page very often. There's there's Kim Kardashian. There's... what else? We probably have Hannah and her horse on there, or without her horse.
Who's Hannah and her horse?
Hannah, the Sports Illustrated gal.
Oh.
She's been on here a couple of times. There's the supermodel breastfeeding her baby. There's all sorts of stuff on there. If you like the ladies, there's a handful of those. And of course, there's the cat. Is it walking up or down the stairs? That's what the show fun page is all about.
It's fun.
Yes. It is. We're having fun. All right. So, Jeff, let's get you to get your feet wet here on this program. You've been sitting there patiently, just kind of feeling your way. I know there's no way to feel absolutely comfortable in this room because we're just generally uncomfortable people. But feel free. Feel free to be awkward as you present this story. Now, what are we going to get, a football team or the Olympics? What's your guess?
Well, it's kind of a toss-up. After Boston ended its bid for the 2024 Olympics.
I thought they won it. Didn't they win?
They did, but then due to a series of mishaps, proposed venue changes, and public opposition, because they let them vote on it, and the people kind of
They said
to
no. Yeah.
LA will get another shot to bid on it again, along with Paris, Rome, and Hamburg also.
Oh, okay, so that's some pretty tough competition.
Yeah, but we might get it.
Paris, summer in Paris is not bad. Rome, oh, God, it gets so hot and sweaty in Rome in the summer, doesn't it?
But it's Rome.
It is Rome. What are you going to do? I mean, will they put it in the old Colosseum?
Oh, how cool would that be?
It would, yeah.
I don't think it could hold
never
up.
Happen. You can only drive your car on...
They're renovating it.
On odd or even days, I forget which it is, because they're trying to limit the amount of slow burn to that Colosseum, to all the relics. They're slowly but surely crumbling away.
It's always under construction, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, one of these days, they'll finish it.
Yep, and today actually is in history. In 1984 was when the L.A. Summer Olympics opened here.
Really? Then. Today was the day?
Today's the day.
I have so much memorabilia from the 1984 Olympics, and it's practically useless and worthless because I look on eBay all the time and I say, okay, I've got this box full of silver spoons that say, and silver spoons, they've got to be worth something. But these silver spoons, they're 1984 Summer Olympics Los Angeles silver spoons, commemorative spoons, and they're worth less than typical silver spoons.
Yeah, but you've been eating with them, though.
Right. No, so I'm thinking if the Olympics come back to Los Angeles, then all the tourists will come along and they'll say, hey, I'll trade you my 2024 spoons for your 1984 spoons. And I'll say, well, yeah, I'll take your spoons plus a couple grand.
And that might happen.
And they've probably got 2,000 euros in their pocket right there. And they'll say, okay, fine.
Let's do it.
Rich
do
Euro
this.
Visitor.
Good luck with that.
Goodness. All right. Well, thanks for that. So I guess we can surmise then that we more than likely will get the Olympics. I don't know. I think this whole Olympic process is probably fixed, don't you think?
Well, everything else is.
Like FIFA?
Yeah.
Yeah, that comes from
me. In fact, there are probably people that are on the FIFA board who are also on the Olympic board. I could be wrong on that, but...
You're probably right.
Yeah. You just grease the right hands. Why do you think the thing lost the vote in Boston? Probably Los Angeles had something to do with that.
I don't know.
You know, the shifty mayor, the guy that runs Los Angeles. What's his name?
Shifty mayor.
Mayor Shifty. No, he's not shifty. He's a smart guy. He's one of the. He's a Rhodes Scholar, right?
Yes, actually, he is.
He's a real smart guy. Why can't I think of his name?
I can't either. not Garcetti. That's
yeah. No, it's yeah. Garcetti.
It is Garcetti.
Mayor Garcetti. Eric Garcetti, and his dad Gil. But I think Eric
really?
Eric's smarter than his dad.
Well, his dad's retired.
He's a
rookie.
Yeah. See. So there you go. All right, now we've learned something. That we've learned that the mayor will never come on this program.
And he's shifty. I like that word, shifty.
Yes,
need
right.
to bring that back.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? If you ever do a crossword puzzle, mm-hmm. and the clue comes up and it says elevator man, do you know what the answer is?
I don't do crossword puzzles.
It's the answer is almost always Otis, O-T-I-S. You know why?
No.
That's the brand of...
They make elevators.
Elevator, yeah. In almost every case. You go into the elevator, you'll see the sign, or you'll see, as you walk out, the little strip where the door opens and closes, you'll be able to walk through, and you will see at the... As you're leaving the door, right there at the floor, it says Otis. Mm-hmm. Or right there on the certificate. The certificate on the door where it says this has been inspected.
You hope.
As of 1997 was the last time it was inspected.
Yep.
Yeah. And it says Otis right there. So anyway, here's the interesting fact about Otis. The Otis Elevator Company carries almost 1 billion people a day. When you think of all the elevators and all the elevators out there, 1 billion people a day, which means they transport the equivalent of every person in the world in approximately 9 days.
Wow.
And, man, that's almost better.
That's incredible.
Is that better than all the taxis and the airlines in the country?
It sounds like it. I mean, even just to say that if you just transported all the people from China or India, that's already impressive.
Right.
But the entire world?
Yeah.
Can we believe it, though? How do they know? They don't know. They're just making it up.
They're counting in a building? Yeah.
They're counting it. Somebody's counting.
I don't know.
Yeah, and who else is counting? You know what? They're counting the days until this guy retires from his job at Walmart.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not going to retire.
Maybe not. I don't think he's retiring. He will never retire.
Who is this guy? And how old is he?
This guy, his name is Lauren Wade. He just turned 103 years old.
Wow.
And he has worked at this Walmart in Kansas for 33 years. And he says he says his secret to his longevity is the main thing is that I work all the time. He says, I don't want to sit around. It's boring to sit around the house and do nothing. So I try to have something to do all the time.
Nose to the grindstone.
There you go. He says a job gets him up in the morning and keeps him out.
And you don't have time to brood about things when you're working, right?
Stay active, stay social, stay purposeful.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah,
you
hear all the time about these people that work, work, and then they retire, and a week later they drop dead.
Boom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem like to be a very slippery slope. I don't think I'm going to ever retire.
Yeah. And plus, look at all the entertainment this guy gets working at Walmart. You ever see
yes.
the people walking
oh
around
gosh.
In there? I mean, not everybody, but there are Walmart people.
There are some characters.
You know who those people are?
I think
Walmart
you do.
People. Here's one, and this may fit the definition of cruel and unusual punishment. Back in December, a 63-year-old woman, her name is Johanna Casimore is her last name. She got caught shoplifting $258 worth of stuff at a Walmart in New Jersey. Her trial was earlier this month, and the judge fined her $250, which is less than the value of what she stole, plus court costs, which now it's more than the value of what she stole. She also got 10 days of community service. But in addition to that, the judge said she's not allowed to set foot in any Walmart for the rest of her life.
No.
Is that cruel and unusual?
For her, probably.
Of course it is. For stealing $258 worth of crap.
Wow. That seems pretty stiff.
Maybe it was really great crap.
Well, I guess, you know.
It all depends.
But $258.
All depends what they're pushing that day at Walmart. Yeah, I don't know. She thinks, Johanna thinks it's excessive, so she's appealing.
Mm.
So she's going to end up spending $1 million in legal fees fighting this, fighting this thing. She says Walmart can ban her for life if they want to, but a judge shouldn't have that authority. And the thing is, Walmart has already banned her. So she's got to beef with the judge, not with Walmart. So she signed a form at another Walmart a few years ago that said she's never to go in one of their stores. So it's not clear if she was caught shoplifting that time, too. So she may just actually have a problem.
She'll put on a disguise.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's right. A wig, a little fake nose. This could be fun for her.
Yeah.
Could be a whole new career.
Hey, you know what? We were talking about amoebas. Do amoebas do a single cell division? Is that how they get? Do they do that?
I thought amoebas are just a single cell.
And then
they just stay a single cell.
Right? And they don't split and turn into two amoebas?
No, because then they would not be an amoeba.
They wouldn't?
Right?
All right. Okay.
Yeah. I think that's like. I need to look this up. I'm going to sound like an idiot. But I think an amoeba is just a single-celled organism.
So in this studio, the friends may be growing by osmosis because I introduced you, of course, Brooke, and we introduced my old friend, Jeff Kowalczyk, who's here today for the first time, and another old friend who's not old but has been here many times in the past over the course of this illustrious program. You haven't seen her in, it seems like almost a year now, but Katie Clark has just wandered into the studio. I don't know how that happens.
I just showed up.
Yes, it's kind of like
walk in.
It's like when you want to get rid of a dog and you drive far, far away and drop it in the forest and
it just walks back.
And it took you a year.
I live in Burbank. It's a long walk.
You found your way back. Now we have to feed you.
Oh, I'm actually stuffed, but you know what? If you fed me, I would stay
for
weeks.
Gosh. And I know you have a compelling story, a personal story to tell us, and we're going to find out what that is a little later in the program because we have a packed program. And we'd love for you to just stick around and participate with us, if you will. Will you do that?
Sounds good.
Fantastic. Great to see you, Katie. You look good.
Thank you. Good to see you, too, and the crew and everyone.
Yeah. Hey, remember back in the day when the principal said he would sit on a roof or shave his head or do some other outrageous or embarrassing thing if the school kids would read a collective number of books over the summer? Remember those days?
Mm-hmm.
There's some logic behind reading a lot of books all the time, every day, and you'll hear from a kids' literacy expert on that very topic next. Right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, well, welcome back to the program, and thank you. Reading is so important, isn't it? And here's a heartbreaking fact about reading. 38% of kids can't read at grade level. 38%. And even more shocking than that is 43% of adults cannot read at basic level.
Wow.
Which is what, sixth grade? Is that basic reading level?
That sounds
about right. Yeah, more or less. How do we turn this around? Well, joining us live is kids literacy expert, the creator of the Read 5 Books in a Week program, author of a bunch of books, including the How to Read 5 Books in a Week series for children, teens, and adults. And you could find those, by the way, in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Dr. Donna Schwankowski, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really enjoy it.
Oh, good. We're thrilled that you're here. Now, why do you think reading is such a challenge for so many people?
You know, one of the children that I'm tutoring right now, I asked him, he's 11 years old, and he doesn't know how to read. And I said, what is it that, you know, made you not want to read? And he said, it just was too hard at an early age. And I'm finding that more and more, that children make a decision about first grade, and if they think it's too hard, that's it. They just kind of give up.
But you know what? They have an idea that it's for kids that are in the first grade, it seems to me that ideas are fleeting, and they're either reinforced or they're not reinforced by adults.
Yeah.
And was there some adult in this child's life who said, yeah, you're right, it's hard, so well, let's work through it. But okay, now, yeah, sure, I was right, it is hard. And then you carry that definition with you throughout life.
Yes. And it lowers self-esteem. It doesn't improve social communication skills. It leads them really to the prison.
Yeah. And so very often in life, we like to lay blame somewhere. So who's to blame for the poor reading skills? Is it parents? Is it the schools? Is it, I don't know, Miley Cyrus?
You know, I don't think it's one person in particular. I think it's a combination of factors. You know, and one of the overlooked causes, I believe, is the way that the textbooks are even written in the first place. And that's one of the things that we found in the Reading 5 Books in a Week program is when we choose the books to read during the week, you know, if we do it correctly, then the kids don't have any problem and they love reading. But if they go back to textbooks and things like that, then there's a big problem. So it's the way that they they write those textbooks. It's the fonts. It's everything.
It's a lot of things
about them.
So when you talk about the font, then, is it how the brain recognizes the data and then what it does with it once it sees it? Is that what that is?
That is a big component. And, you know, when you look at some of the neurological studies, you find that the brain, the growing brain, developing brain, needs a certain size font so that it can even absorb the information.
That's interesting.
You know, if they have to strain for it, it's going to be too hard. And then it goes back to what that boy said.
So it's a good progression then. You start with the picture books, and then you go to the books that have 5 or 6 words in each page, and the words are rather large. I mean, that's how it should be, right?
That's how children start to read.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. But you,
successful
in your approach, and you mentioned the child that you're treating now, 11-year-old child, you use kind of a unique approach in helping people improve their reading skills. And can you give us a feel for what that is?
Yes. What I did was, you know, I taught accelerated learning to postgraduate students in science, you know, one of the worst possible things to learn, for about 20 years. And so I took all the methods that I had developed over those years, and then put them into the Read 5 Books in a Week program. And so what I'm doing is I'm building on the child's ability to get those first 100 facts on a topic in as quickly as possible and as solidly as possible in the brain. And when I can do that, then the child can now speed think, he can speed read. When he reads another book on the same topic, he's zipping through it. He's thinking, oh, you know what, I can do this. I can do it. So there's a lot of things that are built into it, but those are the primary.
I want to learn those things. Do I have to be a child? Is it too late?
No. No. In fact, see, in the Read 5 Books in a Week program, what I have is I thought, you know, there's such a big problem for even the parents. So why not get the kids and the parents both to read 5 books in a week?
Yeah, why not? I need to read 5 books a week as the host of a talk show, but I rarely do. I usually just take the notes from the PR people and pretend like I wrote the book or like I read it. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we all do, right?
Right.
Sure. No, but I'd love to read your books, of course, and all the other books from the authors on this program, but 5 a week, it doesn't seem possible. Now we're talking, I don't know, 6,000 pages.
No, it is possible. And for the kids, we start out with one book is 100 to 120 pages, and that's it. See, so again, the selection of the books is very important in the beginning, but what we found in the pilot studies was that after about a month when the kids were reading, they now chose books that were 400 and 700 pages long.
And they could knock down 5 of those a week.
And they could do it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the comprehension of these books, like they can still keep track of what they're reading?
Yes, and that's one of the best things because, you know, when you look at speed reading programs out there, they have a high rate of reading, but they have a very low level of comprehension.
Yeah.
So it's like 50 to 67%.
And that's always been my problem.
Me too.
If I try to speed through
a
book, right, and I'll end up, okay, I'm on my 6th pass through this chapter, and I still don't get it.
Right. So if the kids had 50 to 67%, they're not even going to pass the class. So I thought, you know, I have to have a very high comprehension rate in there, and that's what I did. I built that in there too. So it's all.
So it's neurologic then, isn't it?
It's all neurologic. That's my theory.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And so we need a smart doctor like you to help us with this. Now, can parents help their kids catch up?
Yes. Yes. So the parents can do it, and the kids can do it too at the same time.
Hmm. All right. But it's tough these days. I mean, tougher than it was when back in my day. There are so many more distractions today than there were when you're trying to learn to read these days. You know, a book doesn't seem as interesting as some of the other things that are out there.
Well, it doesn't, but once you get into it, then you find that your mind starts going into imagination and you start thinking of possibilities, and before long, you're dreaming big.
Yeah.
That's what the bottom line is.
Gotcha. Books, How to Read 5 Books in a Week. There's one for children. There's one for teens and adults. There's actually a workbook in there if you wanted to actually start your own process to teach your child there at home or to teach the adults. It's all there in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com or you could. You must have a website as well, because don't ask people to spell your last name. Come on, doctor.
What's the matter with you?
I don't. Schwan
Kowski. Go by Dr. Donna.
Dr. Donna. And is there a website? DrDonna.com.
It's not drdonna.com, but it's read5booksinaweek.
Oh, that's easy.
.com, yeah.
read5booksinaweek.com. We'll add that to our links page. Dr. Donna Schwankowski, thank you very much. Very enlightening. I want a speed read, and I'm going to get more into this.
Okay, and I'm going to send you the books.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. There she goes. Good. I feel like I've read a book already just listening to her talk.
I would love to believe that I could still work on my reading comprehension as an adult.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like you either have it or you don't.
Right.
I don't know.
And I think you get to a point as an adult, and guys, maybe you agree with this, that, okay, I'm not done learning things, but I'm done learning how to do things.
Kind of
Doesn't
like comprehension.
That make sense?
Yeah, I get what you're saying, for sure.
Like old dog, new tricks. Like, I don't need to learn how to do that. I can learn it my own way.
Right, and that's the smokescreen we put out to say that, oh, we don't want to put in the effort to learn how to do something.
I don't know. I have this feeling, and I feel like I've read it before, that after a certain age, like after, say, 30 or late 20s, your brain sort of becomes hardwired in certain ways and for certain skills and stuff. And I kind of wonder, like, can I physiologically learn things differently?
Well, you know, we didn't talk about it with the doctor, but in everything, in change, you require commitment. And so typically, if you do the same thing every day for 21 days, that's what the experts say. More or less, it's going to become part of your routine. But it does take about 21 days of doing the same thing every day, like when you start going back to the gym for the 50th time. And if you go every day for 3 weeks, then chances are you're probably going to stick with it for the better part of another couple months. Right?
I've already moved on to 5 different other things.
Yes, right.
There's always excuses, too, that factor. I've got other things to do.
I got to go in the backyard and grill a steak. That's what I got to do. And coming up next, you might think twice about firing up your backyard grill after you hear what our next guest has to say right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. All right, here we go. We're back. We have Brooke and Jeff and Katie in the studio. I'm Phil. How's it going? All right. I don't know about you, but I love grilling.
Oh, yeah.
I really do. The meat comes out so perfect. I even bake pizzas in my grill on a stone.
Your new grill,
it's new. And I'm just going nuts. The pizza's on a stone. Perfection, really. Mm. But have you ever stopped to wonder about the risks of using your barbecue or your gas-powered grill? Do those risks outweigh the benefits of the juicy, tender, charbroiled burgers or steaks, the chicken, the fish, the pizza? All right, I'm getting lost here for a second.
Oh, just start.
Focus. Now, let's here to explain why charring meat is dangerous is the author of the upcoming book, or he may still be authoring it. It's called Thrivology, and we'll let you know when it comes out in the stores. He's a naturopathic doctor, acupuncturist, and an expert in holistic medicine, Dr. Mark Carney. Hey, Dr. Carney, how are you?
Hi, it's great to be here.
Good. It's great to have you here. And I'm not giving up my grill, am I?
No. And in fact, I mean, what I want to point out are some of the problems, but most Americans own grills and use them on an average of 1 to 2 times per week in the summer. So people are still going to use them. But I want to at least educate people what some of the risks are and then give a lot of strategies for how to minimize those risks.
And still enjoy the juicy steak.
Absolutely.
So what's the concern?
By the way.
Well, I'm sorry. What's that? You grill as well?
Oh, I just was at a weekend in the wilderness, and we had some grilled meat as well. So, but there's things that you can do to make it safer.
So. Now, I want to roll back just for a second. You were in the wilderness, grilled meat. So what, squirrel, badger?
It was more car camping. So, we had some chefs that were very high-end.
Oh, I see. Hoity-toity. All right, so what's the concern about grilling then?
Well, there's three. This is like alphabet soup here. There's three different compounds to be aware of. And one's called HCAs, which stands for heterocyclic amines. And that's in the char, like the blackened color that's on the meat. And that poses its own problems. There's definite links to cancers like colon, prostate, pancreatic, even breast. And this is well studied by the National Institutes of Health. This is, when the meat gets to a high heat and it turns black. So
that's a dead giveaway that you're not all that great at grilling.
Well, some people like that they take pride in being able to have that checker marked pattern on their steaks.
True, but yeah, you get beyond, you know, especially when you're doing the chicken and the grease comes down into the flames and all of a sudden everything's on fire and you don't know what to do, and so you serve it to your guests
with a smile.
Yes.
The second of the alphabet soup are the PAHs, which are polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. And so this also forms certain cancers, and this is what happens when the fat, like you just described, hits the hot coals and creates that smoke. And so you smell that smoke, right, in the clothing and your hair. Mm-hmm. It's getting in your lungs, too. And the more smoky it is, that the grill is, the more the PAHs are formed.
Lovely. All right. So I've inhaled a fair amount of that over the course of my life.
Yeah.
As has everybody, probably.
Oh, exactly. You're right. So the third piece are the AGESs, and those are advanced glycation end products. And any time food's cooked at high temperatures, it creates this. And these are compounds that build up in our tissues and speeds up the aging process and causes all kinds of problems. Diabetes is one of them. So the AGEs are found in the char.
Huh. All right. So does it make sense then to maybe to slow cook at lower temps?
Absolutely. That is one of the solutions. So what I recommend, and this is just kind of a bunch of different ideas all at once, is to do things that reduce the amount of cooking time and reduce the amount of heat. So you can cut the meat into smaller pieces because then it requires less time to cook.
Yeah.
And you can also pre-cook it. So if it's not in the wilderness, you can go in your oven at lower temperatures and cook it about halfway. Then put it on the grill.
Mm-hmm.
Also, pre-cooking reduces the amount of fat, so there's less that's going to drip onto the coals.
Right. Now, some of the grills, the fancy ones, okay, fine, like the one I just got, has a feature next to the main grill where you can sear the meat to kind of hold the juices in. But we're searing, and so the searing is a bad thing, but holding the juices in is a good thing. So there's a compromise.
Yeah, exactly. It's you're going to have risk and benefit in anything in life, right?
Right. And then you put the top down on the grill and you eliminate the smoke. So at least there's that. So that now I'm eliminating the the PAHs or the AGES?
I know that's the alphabet soup. It's the PAHs that are formed in the smoke.
Yes. Okay. All right.
But a big one is marinades. So marinades, and it has to be done right, but marinades can reduce up to 90% of the HCAs, and marinades also reduce a lot of the AGEs and the PAHs.
No kidding. So, what's a common marinade that you might use in one of your fancy wilderness outings?
What we did use was a blend of olive oil, lemon juice, and garlic. But you could use actually red wine and beer. This has been studied. I mean, people are spending a lot of money studying this because they want to do their grills. So.
And there's extra red wine and beer when they do the study.
Yeah, it's like you have to have a control group and a placebo group. So,
how do I get involved in these control groups?
Yeah, you just ask. You ask the federal government, I'm doing a study. May I have some money? Here's will $3 million be enough?
I'll just take the wine.
Yeah, all right.
As long as they're given proper informed consent.
Yeah, of course.
So that's different marinades, but the red wine and the beer and that was soaking in it for 6 hours, sometimes 4 hours beforehand.
Sounds like my weekend.
Exactly. It showed a reduction of up to 90% of the HCAs.
Oh.
The acidic marinades, so like vinegar or lemon juice, also reduced it by about 90%.
Yeah.
And reduced the AGESs as well.
Right. Okay, so let's see what we've learned. There are some fine marinades out there. Pre-cook your meat. Cut them into smaller pieces. Cook longer at lower heat, avoid the char, and avoid the greasy fat dripping on the flames. And if you can do all of those things, then you're well ahead of the game.
Exactly. So this is about reducing your risks and still enjoying the food that you've come to love over the years.
Gotcha. Right? When is your book Thrivology coming out?
Not soon enough, but my goal is the end of this year, and it's co-authored by myself and my lovely bride, my wife, who we co-run our office, Thrivology.
And you have a website, no doubt.
It is. It's Thrivology123.com. It's the word thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E, and then add O-L-O-G-Y with the numbers 123.
And we're there. We'll add you to our links page of PhilHewlettAndFriends.com. Dr. Mark Carney, thank you very much. Gosh, I could use a steak right now.
Thank you, Phil. It's lovely to be on.
All right. There we go. And that was enlightening. And in other health news, our friend Katie Clark is here today. And we wanted to get just a little time with you because we know that you've had they've been poking you and sticking you and drawing blood and radiating you and all sorts of things. They meaning the doctors and the technicians, because for your entire life, you've been dealing with some kind of heart condition. Can you just tell us what you're going through?
Well, it's a really common condition called mitral valve prolapse.
Oh, sure. I've heard
right?
of that. MVP.
A lot of people have it. And sometimes people have it diagnosed wrong, but I actually have it. Doctors would listen to my heart and they go, you really have it. So I actually have leaflets that don't close all the way, and it's gotten worse and worse over the years. And so I had seen you one day. You had called me at the last minute to come in, and I was wearing a Holter monitor.
Right.
Remember that?
Sure. They're checking your heart rate.
The EKG for the 24 hours. So last year, about a week after I saw you, I found out I need surgery to fix the valve.
Uh-oh.
So that's what I was doing today.
This is open heart surgery, the whole spiel, huh? They're gonna, they're gonna crack your
sternum,
crack the sternum.
And there's different ways to do it, but certain reasons for doing it one way, certain reasons for doing it another.
They can't
way.
Go in there with like a little scope through the side of your ribs or something and do it that way.
They can. I guess it depends on the doctor. It depends on their expertise and your body, and a lot of factors go into it.
Sure.
I actually prefer the open because they can really get in there and really fix it. I don't want to ever have to do this again.
Well, is this a fairly common procedure?
I think it is. They go in, through the chest, and I know that they do that every day. I mean, the doctor I have said, I do this 3 to 4 times a week.
Yeah.
So I know that he does that a lot, but obviously it's only happening to me once.
Well, you're right. I was going to say he doesn't do it to you 3-4 times a week.
Which is the whole thing. So, yeah. So it's, and I'm having it next Tuesday, actually, a week from today.
So other than the valve that doesn't shut, the heart is healthy?
Yeah. And the CAT scan is supposed to find out the blockages, and they literally were like, we're just going to do it as a precaution.
Wow.
So, yeah, and so it's weird, and I haven't really publicly talked about it, so.
This is a first. Mm-hmm. And when does the surgery happen?
Next Tuesday. So while you guys are on the show next Tuesday, I will be not so available for talking.
No, we might call you. Can we call you at the hospital and put you on the air?
You can call all you want.
You'll be all drugged up.
I won't be able to talk, but that's fine.
No, you'll have a tube in your mouth.
How long is your recovery going to be?
I think like up to 2 months.
Wow.
You ready? You pumped? No.
All right.
We'll
keep you in our prayers, and we wish
you
all the best, and look for a stronger, a better Katie the next time we see you.
Absolutely.
We want to see your scar.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be there.
All right. That's it for hour one of the program. So much more coming up, including what to do about your smelly, putrid, disgusting, hairy, ugly feet. That and more in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Coming up next.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and not back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show. where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, ugly feet and what to do about them. National parks without the crowds. The evil landscaper. And proof your mind is more powerful than your prescription. Brooke Peterson, Jeff Kowalczyk, and Katie Clark just left. But the other two are still here. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for listening. And we wish Katie the best. She's on her way to take it easy for a week, and then she'll have her open heart surgery.
Wow.
And then we expect to have her back on the program where she can have her own segment, just talk about what happened with the surgery, and it should be informative and enlightening, and we fully expect her to come through with flying colors.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just scary stuff, though.
Yeah, I can't even imagine, honestly, yeah.
Crack your sternum open. And
I was a baby about a stupid little health thing last year, and I can't even imagine going through something like that.
What'd you have, like a hangnail fixed or something?
No, actually, I mean, it was melanoma, but it was caught so early, it was no big deal at all.
A skin thing, yeah.
Yeah, it was a skin thing. And it could have been serious, but it wasn't.
Because you get checked all the time.
Yeah, because I'm one of those white, like really white people.
Right,
really
I know what that means. Me too. You're bright.
I'm fair skinned.
Yeah,
anyway,
right.
So, God love her.
Yeah. Good. She'll be fine.
She will.
We'll hear from her soon. And let's get back to you, Brooke, now that we have our sunglasses on. We've talked on this program quite a bit about the near future and robots, and the smart guys always weigh in. They say, you know what, in our lifetime, there will be robots that have self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And once they have that, it's all over. But the other concern is, and we're starting to see this now, and on the show fun page a week or two ago, we revealed a video of an autonomous robot gunner machine thing that you could set up at your house, your palatial suburban estate. And if somebody walks in within the range of this thing, it will decide whether or not to shoot. And it's not up to you.
And to have
the
no
robot
control
decides.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and so it's getting scary. And we had our first robot death, robot-induced death by a factory worker. The robot came up, grabbed him, and threw him against the wall, and he died.
Oh.
And this happened like 3 weeks ago at a plant.
Wow.
Yes, at a robotized, a mechanized plant. The robot just, it was garbage in, garbage out. There was a human that programmed the robot incorrectly, mm-hmm. but it grabbed an employee
but
and
that's the thing, human
smashed
error.
It It'll, against the wall.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. So what's the latest with the robots?
Well, the latest that I have found here is that now there has been an open letter published by the Future of Life Institute that is basically asking the world to stop this technology as best they can because they're afraid it's going to lead to an arms race, basically, of an AI arms race. And the notable thing about this is that Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk, and Steve Wozniak, all three very influential people in the tech world, have supported this letter and have signed it themselves. And they would like very much for this not to happen.
And so we're talking about autonomous robots that could be perhaps an army of robots that in the wrong hands could attack and be invincible.
Yeah, well, it says here, an autonomous weapon system is a weapon that, once activated or launched, decides to select its own targets and kills them without further human intervention.
Yes, see, exactly. And that's what that one item on our show fun page is called. And I'll tell you what the name of that robot is. It's the, give me just a second.
The machine has the kill decision.
Yes, exactly.
Which is, I can't even believe that we would even consider something like this,
the
honestly.
South Korean Defense Department built this Super Aegis II robot turret sentry.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a turret with a fairly high caliber machine gun on it and a giant camera, and it sits there and waits for you to walk into the field of range. And if you walk in there, it speaks to you. It says, turn around now and leave the property. You've entered a secure zone. Turn around now or I'll shoot. And if it does shoot, it will leave a rather large crater where you used to be standing.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I mean, does this not sound like Terminator?
It,
How is this actually happening?
And how in the world can, as smart as Elon Musk and Steve Wozniak and Stephen Hawking are, how in the world can a letter change anything if some rogue nation decides, okay, fine, we're going to put all our money into robots and we're going to conquer the world?
That's the thing. The technology is already out. Like, you know, the box has been opened.
Yeah.
We can't undo it.
Yeah.
And so I just don't think.
And look, then Japan, I mean, why can't we all be peace and love peace-loving robot creators like Japan, because they're putting all their money into making erotic massage robots.
That sounds better.
Doesn't it?
Better.
Yes.
I'll take that.
They're making robots that look just like human beings with skin and feelings.
And strong hands.
And strong hands. And they massage you. All right, fine. It's not going to happen that way. Again, in our lifetime, robots are going to kill us. I know. Yeah, but
an amoeba.
You could always take a pill and just chill, right? Just take a pill. Doesn't matter what kind of pill it is, apparently.
Not at all. Not at all. There's been a new study to determine the fact that the placebo effect. Have you ever experienced a placebo effect yourself? Do you know if you've had it or not?
I don't know because nobody's ever told me. I wonder about my doctor, Dr. Kurtz, who's been on the show frequently. He's a little wacky.
He's a shifty one.
He might say, here, hey, give Phil a bottle of sugar pills. Let's see what happens. And then
Phil's fine.
Call me up and how's it going, Phil? Hey, Phil, great. Oh, good. It was those pills I gave you. But he won't tell me what it is. That would ruin his
So you've never become aware of being suckered?
Never been aware of a placebo, no.
Well, you might not need to be because apparently if there's this study that says that if you believe in the placebo so much through experience of experiencing the effects of this placebo mm-hmm. and have had positive experiences with it, even when you're told it's a placebo,
yeah.
it still works.
Wow.
For the people. It still works. It still eases the pain. It still cures their symptoms. Like they believe, even if it is a placebo, and they are fully aware that it still works.
So it's the mind, really.
It's the mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Mind, I mean, Jeff. I mean, you've done this. This is like the people that put magnets in their armpits or crystals mm-hmm. in their rectum, and they get.
I haven't done that one.
No, you haven't done that yet.
Not that one.
And they swear that they are cured
yes.
of whatever it is by the magnet or by the crystal.
And the mind. It's so cool. And don't we access like what 7% of it or something? Or brain power? I suppose.
Right. But yeah. We learned that from that movie, Lucy. Didn't we learn that from that movie?
If we had all of it accessible between yeah. the mind and the brain,
mm-hmm. ooh. Your head would explode.
Yes. Well,
yeah,
mine would.
Mine would.
Yes. All right, fine. Now, the future is just scary, but sometimes the present is scary. And when you're sitting around, you're watching a movie. You have to worry about the idiots in the theater, don't you?
More and more these days, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, when I go to the movie theater, and I think this is the whole point of going to movie theater. You want to
escape.
Exactly. See a movie in the dark, in the community of peers and people around you, somewhat social. But now, starting beginning in Central Florida at AMC Theaters, mm-hmm. they are now. Showing a warning before their movies saying if you happen to see any suspiciously strange characters or bad agendas, report them to our crew. So now you're sitting in a dark theater and you have this message of look around, pay attention, you're not safe. And I guess we have that feeling already because of the shootings in Colorado and now in Louisiana. But I mean, I don't want that. I don't want that message, honestly.
Right. Well,
I don't want to be reminded.
Again, I can't remember the last time I went into a theater. I sit at home and watch the DVDs. They come in the mail.
Yeah, that's the thing. People, and I think they're saying that attendance is probably going to really, really plummet because not only do people already have their beefs with public theaters, but now you have this, and they have these warnings about looking around for suspicious
behavior.
And
you know what's sad
behavior.
About this, too, is you report the suspicious behavior, and you know who comes over to help.
It's like an 18-year-old kid.
It's Jimmy with the broom and the little metal.
Yeah, poor Jimmy.
Yeah, right? Jimmy's got to all of a sudden confront this guy.
With the broomstick.
Yes.
Yeah. Is he trained? I doubt it. You know, it's like his summer job.
Right.
It's
he can
cool
hold up
Jimmy.
His metal dustpan as a shield, but that's all he's got, right?
Oh, poor Jimmy.
If I'm Jimmy, I just, no, sir, I'm not doing that. I'm leaving. I quit. Yeah.
Done.
And you take a bottomless popcorn tub with you
and
on the way.
And apply a Pinkberry next door.
Exactly. Nobody's attacking the Pinkberry.
Mm-mm.
Why should they? All right, fine. Okay, we were talking about grilling in the last hour, and oh gosh, I was just thinking about eating some good grilled steaks and just drinking some beers before they get in the marinade, and just But then again, you're packing on the pounds, the calories when you do that sort of thing, and people forever have been trying to go on a diet, and later in the program, we're going to find out from our friend Jeff here about the best way to diet is. It might be learned not by humans or from reading a book, but by following the advice of a cat. I know it sounds strange, but Jeff will tell us about that a little bit later. But right now, what I want you to do is take a look at your feet.
You could see them,
right? Or is your belly or your enormous boobs blocking your view? Well, if you can see your feet, we know your feet are a disaster. And we're going to do something about that next, because the foot doctor pays a visit to help us clean up those puppies next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, when I say pus-filled fungus sores, what do you think of?
Ew.
Between your toes? You think of that?
Do you?
No. Wait, how hard is it getting harder and harder for you to trim your toenails? That's what I want to know. Do you hire somebody to do that? I'm scared to get
the fifth on these questions.
I'm scared to get a pedicure. Because I saw this one thing on TV. I saw it, and it scared me away from the concept forever. These ladies were going into the beauty shop, and they put their foot in a bucket, and the lady would do the pedicure, and then they leave, and the lovely young ladies, and all of a sudden they had flesh-eating disease on their legs. And so it scared me away from that sort of thing. So I just take the lawn clippers to my toenails, and I'm good.
Whatever it takes.
Good to go. I'm just throwing on some gym socks anyway. Nobody's looking at my feet. Now, we're talking about feet here, and joining us live is somebody who knows a thing or two about feet. He's a podiatrist. It's Dr. Dan Margolin. Hi, Dr. Dan. How are you?
Hi, Phil. How are you, sir? After hearing that, you're actually having me question my career. I might change it now.
Well, I'm sorry, but
I
do have an effect on some people.
First, when you put it that way, I got to be honest with you.
My goodness, though, you've probably seen some monsters in your day, huh?
I have. You know, it's funny. I've been doing this for 28 years, and you sort of get used to, you know, when you hear somebody talk about it like that, but it's what I do every day. When I first started 28 years ago in school, when they showed us pictures of some of the things we would be doing, it was pretty shocking. And like I said, now you're used to it and just want to help people.
So. Now, what is it about feet? I mean, no matter how hard you try to be tidy on your feet, you clean them off, you soak them in alcohol or whatever it is, that witch hazel, and you throw on a pair of shoes, and by the time you take the shoes off, all of a sudden you've got a cheese factory growing there, and you don't understand why.
You know, one of the things, just on a serious note, like fungus and all those things, they like humidity, they like dampness and stuff like that, so it's a perfect... Your shoe is the perfect breeding ground for that.
Yeah. Are we better off just going barefoot?
You know, you are and you aren't, I guess, right? I guess if you've got, like, athlete's foot or what you were saying before, some of the sores and things like that, sometimes drying them out, actually, in the sun is a better thing. But a lot of times people also, as an example, by the end of the summer, I get a lot of women that wear flats, you know, like there's no arch support, nothing like that. They come in, their feet are killing. We've got lines out the door. And essentially what they're doing is going barefoot.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you
don't. So we were made to be barefoot, but we improved our lot by inventing shoes with inserts in there that hold up our arch.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, describe the ultimate in ugly feet for us. What do you see when you say, uh-oh, this is, boy, I'm going to buy a new RV with this patient?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on the patient. We see, like, older people. We see younger people. So sometimes that probably from... The perspective of somebody who hasn't seen this, the patients that come in with these really elongated, thick fungal nails would be the kind of thing that would sort of gross you out.
Yellow and cracked.
How does that happen, though? Where do they come from?
You know, I'll tell you, the worst, I did have a really bad case the other day, which was on a fairly young, being somebody in their 50s, had the nail that actually curled around and went into the skin on the top of their foot.
Ooh.
It was about probably like 2 inches. I don't know how she walked on it, but that was the worst I've seen in many years. It usually happens, the toenail is designed to protect the bone underneath, and it's designed to really block any kind of fungus from getting in there. But if there's any injury to the nail, the fungus gets in, and it traps it, and it actually creates a thickening, and it can go. It can get pretty bad.
Yeah. You know, when somebody drops something on their toe, on their big toe, and then the toenail turns black and cracks in the middle, are there two schools of thought, or is there just one? What do you say? Do you have the toenail removed, or you just kind of wait for it to grow out?
Yeah, you know, it sort of depends. I mean, if the injury is really bad and there's almost like a lot of pressure built up on it, you release the pressure. So in that case, you might have to take the nail off. If it's just like a little bit of bleeding under there, usually we have you start on some sort of a topical antifungal. Because the problem is you don't want that, really that's blood under the nail.
Yeah.
You don't want the blood to become like food for fungus.
Yeah.
So that's the concern.
So what's the best way then to care for your feet when it comes to cleaning them? Is soap and water good enough, or do you have to go an extra step?
Yeah, I think soap, you know, again, it depends on the person, but soap and water is fine. You know, the key is really drying in between your toes. Some patients that have diabetes, you know, what happens is they don't have such great feeling in their feet, and so they don't, you know, they can get infections where yourself or myself would actually feel if it started to get like a fungus, it started to crack. They don't.
Yeah.
And so it really can get bad. It can get pretty serious.
Is there a right and a wrong way to clip your toenails?
There is, actually. You know, you're better off. I mean, here's the deal. So years ago, they used to think that the nail grew in from the sides. And they used to think if you cut a V in the center of it,
yeah, I heard about that.
You know, it would relieve the pressure. It's not true though. What the nail grows from the back part and it grows forward, so you're always better off leaving it a little bit longer, and then rounding it off over the edge of the nail. A lot of people will really start digging into the corners, and that's actually not a great way to do it.
Yeah, gotcha. All right, I see the ladies all the time using the pumice files, maybe even I don't know cheese graters to smooth out their heels. Doesn't that just toughen up the skin and perpetuate the problems?
You know, it can. Here's the thing. The reason you get the callus there, it's to protect the skin. So basically what happens is the bone rubs against the skin, which rubs against the floor of the shoe. The skin gets thicker to protect itself. At a certain point, though, it's almost like a rock in your shoe.
Yeah.
So trimming it down to some degree actually alleviates the pressure on it. So a little bit it's okay, but if you go too far, yeah, you can actually create a problem.
Yeah, you see those power sanders, as seen on TV, right?
Absolutely.
Call down. We'll give you an extra sandpaper. Should we use sunblock on our feet when we wear the sandals or the flip-flops?
I think it's a smart idea. I've seen a lot of people come in with not realizing, you know, they put it everywhere else and they get the sunburn on the top of the foot.
Yeah.
And that's tough because then you try putting a shoe on top of that. It's pretty rough.
What do you say to your female patients about their 4 or 5 inch heels?
You know, first of all, probably not that much because they'll yell at me and I not have a practice.
Right, it's fashion. Fashion is pain.
You know, it's
no pain, no gain.
It's part of the deal. But yes, you know, sometimes I'll give you an example. I was in a bank about a year ago, and this woman was probably about 4'11". With her heels on, she was 6'3". I just wanted to stop her right there and give her a card. I sort of held myself back. But
yeah.
Those things create a lot of problems.
Right. Now, Dr. Dan Margolin, you do something very cool that we should hear about. Tell us about your Shoes for the Needy campaign.
Yeah, we've been doing it now about 27 years. When I first started my practice, what happened was I had a lot of patients came in saying that they had a lot of foot pain. They just brought brand new pair of shoes, and they couldn't wear them. And I said, you know, just casually, wow, well, what do you do with the shoes? They said, we throw them out. I said, you know what? What you do is say, bring them here, and I'll see if somebody can use them. And over the years, it just got bigger and bigger. And we've raised, I don't know, maybe hundreds of thousands of pair over these many years.
Fantastic. That is wonderful. And is there a website that people can go to check that out?
Sure. HealPain911.com.
Now, H-E-A-L. Pain.
Actually, H-E-E-L.
Ah, cool. See what you're doing there? Okay.
Right.
HealPain911.com. .com. Okay, we'll add that to our links page and send people over there daily. And, Doctor, you've made my feet feel better. I know that.
Well, thank you so much for having me, because I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, so do we. Well, thank you, Dr. Dan Margolin. We'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Here we go. Now, what do you think?
I have a friend.
Yeah?
A good friend who did have, well, I'll just say my grandfather. My grandfather had those scary feet. My grandfather had scary feet.
Scary, smelly feet?
I don't know if they were smelly, but Yeah, they were, and I remember as a little girl sort of staring at his feet, like, yeah. What's up with that? What's going on with granddad? It left a mark.
You know, back in the day when real men were real men, I mean, my dad used to have an ingrown toenail. He wouldn't see a doctor about it. What's the point of that? Whoa. That costs money. We, you know, I hard-earned money. Let's spend money on food and entertainment. So what he would do is once every couple of months, he'd get out his little kit, which included, you know, the trimmers. But he also had a knife in there. And he used to just cut into his foot, into his toe. Cut into his toe, cut a little wedge of the corner of his foot, and dig out the toe.
Jeez.
Dig out the toenail.
They're very deep, ingrown.
Yeah.
Really deep.
And I was thinking, oh, man, my dad is a real man.
Yeah.
Look at him. He's just cutting into his toe. It's got to hurt. There's blood everywhere.
Yeah.
And but really, it's not very bright, is it?
Oh, did it work?
I suppose it did for a little while.
Well, it's
but,
fine.
You know, he could have bled out. He could have gotten sepsis. Says who knows what? Don't even know if those tools. Oh, sure, the tools were clean. He used to hold a match up to them.
Starlights.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, summer is hot. It's a great time of the year to make a reservation for a vacation in autumn. To one of America's national parks. Our travel guy joins us next with that new angle on a way to avoid people on vacation. Next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Welcome back. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends at .com, and you're at our website where you can find all sorts of wondrous things to explore, especially the show fun page, or you can go to the about page on the menu near the top at the right, and then hold your cursor over it, and a little thing pops up that says regular contributors. You click on that, and you see perhaps the most wonderful specimen of a man you'll ever see on the planet. It's Gary Warner, our travel guy.
You sound like my wife.
Boy, your wife has a deep voice.
I wish. Yeah, you know I do.
Yeah, no idea. Hey,
How you doing, guys?
Doing good. Great. Even better now that you're here. I want to go to a national park, Gary, but it's hot and it's crowded, isn't it?
Oh, gosh. This time of year is just awesomely bad for national parks. And this has been an awesome.
Oh, great.
Now,
Brooke
bad.
Is here, and she's going to, when? Tomorrow? You're leaving
tomorrow? Where are you going?
Sunday for Grand Teton and Yellowstone.
Well, you know, this has been an epically hot summer in the interior west. I don't know if you guys have been following this grand bubble that's been sitting over, you know, the entire area for most of the summer. But I had a friend who was just in Yellowstone 2 weeks ago, and it was 95, you know, degrees. And on top of the crowds, nasty. But you go when you can go. That part of what I was going to say is that, you know, I'm here to pitch – national parks in autumn, and I'll tell you why. Because we're an impatient people. We want to get on with our vacations. So you get people who start going to the national parks in the spring, of course, and during spring break. And then when, like a lot of us, when summer vacation came around, if you have a kids or, you know, it's just the time when you can go or whatever like that. We have a tendency to front load. You know, we want to go in June, July, you know, August. And then along comes one of the best times of year to be doing all this thing, and everybody's already blown their vacation time. And I just think that there are some spots, including the Grand Teton, that I think are at their best, actually, if you go a little later in the year.
Mm.
Later, as in what?
Autumn.
Is September
autumn,
is September late enough, or do you have to wait till October?
No. In some of the northern areas, September certainly is. You know, and you have to look at some of the like weather.com foliage calculators, because part of it is you go to these places like Grand Tetons. Grand Tetons just has some of the most awesome fall colors in the West. And but they're, you know, yeah, they're a good month away, and depending on the heat plus when winter comes, you know, who knows what the show is going to be like this
year.
Well,
Gary, this is counterintuitive to me, because when I think of the colors changing, I think of, oh, maybe a trip to Vermont, and getting to Vermont when the colors change and finding a place to stay is practically impossible, isn't it?
Right, it is. And I'm not going to say it's easy to get in the national parks lodges, but for the most part, people have a tendency to front load their visits, and they're not going to go. They might go, you know, the following year to the same one, but they're not going to go twice usually to the same national park. So if you look at the websites for the campsites and for the lodges, you'll find a lot more availability, particularly in the period right after summer vacation's over. When fall really does kick in, there's enough people who are smart enough to know that that's a good time to go. But it's nothing compared to spring and summer where, you know, you can't get in. And if you can get in, it's just wall-to-wall people. You know, every other person's a buffalo, you know, in right. Yellowstone, you know. And it's really – any time of year to go to these national parks, these jewels is great. But yeah. Everybody has a tendency to go to summer. And I think we all have memories of these – family trips in the summer to Yellowstone.
Yeah, of course.
Well, like
I know
that.
You love the lodges, and they can be a little pricey, and I want to explore that a little bit with you in a moment.
Sure.
But a lot of times people just want to go, and they put up a 10-person tent or something like that
right.
in the
sure.
campground. Do you have to worry more or less about bears in the autumn? Seems to me they're hungrier and packing away the calories for winter. At that time.
You know, I think summer actually is probably the worst time because, you know, the rains stop, and so you're not getting any water. And we're seeing throughout the Pacific Northwest and the far west a lot of animal sightings this year because the water situation is so bad.
See that, Brooke? Learn your bears. Know which ones to mace and which ones to punch in the
nose.
You
know,
and which ones to just say your prayers.
Well, I'm old enough, Phil, and you probably are too, Phil. I remember going to Yellowstone, and they'd had the bears right at the entrance, and you'd roll down the window and give them pieces of bread. That was a cool thing to do. Now preservationists, of course, are horrified that that ever occurred. It's sort of like Lion Country Safari, if you remember that. But the thing I was just going to say is Lassen National Park, just awesome aspen show, golden, beautiful. The Olympic National Park up in Washington's a great spot. A lot of different, you know, people have a tendency to think of that as a rainforesty kind of place, but they have all sorts of hardwood trees that go beautiful. Grand Teton. Now, Grand Teton is always a place where my tip is, if you're going to go visit Yellowstone, stay in Grand Teton and go up to Yellowstone for the day.
That's what we're doing.
That's great.
Yes.
That's a really good.
I got something right.
Yeah, you did. You certainly did because Grand, you know, Yellowstone is just nuts. It's just nuts, and it's nice to be able to get out and go back to Grand Teton, which is absolutely gorgeous spot, and it's not that far away. And then you can go down to Jackson Hole and look around for people with private jets and see if they'll throw some money around. That is a town that has just an amazing amount of money. But anyway, these Western parks, the one I would say a caveat for this year, unfortunately, and this happens quite often, is Yosemite. And the fall foliage is absolutely gorgeous there. There's this one famous oak in this meadow that everyone photographs that turns. But because of the lack of snow and the lack of water, the waterfalls are pretty much either, you know, down to a trickle or off. And if that's what you're going for, then you probably shouldn't go. But if you're going for the, you know, just the beautiful surroundings and having the autumn colors, it's great. But you have to know that fall is, has its upsides, but it certainly has its downsides.
What do you think, Brooke? You're still going to have a good time no matter what.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. I've never done the national park thing, so I'm way more excited than I thought I was going to be, actually.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
It's
super
great. Go ahead.
I do have a question. So other than, because we're going to do the Grand Teton and the Yellowstone, and, you know, other than Old Faithful, which I'm sure we're going to see if we can get through the crowds, what else should I not miss while I'm in this area? Because who knows if I'm going to get back again.
Well, you know, it's a huge area, and there's multiple park exits, north, south, east, and west. Most of the people have a tendency to be down in the south, which is where you're going to be, and that's the closest to Old Faithful and some of the large geysers. You have the nice geyser basins down there. You'll have the bears. I think the Boiling Pots, which are a little bit further, the Painted Pots, which are a little further to the north. But the thing is that you have to come to terms with the fact this is such a huge park. And people have a tendency to do the big loop drive all the way around. And unless you have a lot of, how long are you staying there?
3 days.
3 days. Well, you might be able to do it. You know, I mean, some people go over to Cody, Wyoming, which is out of the east exit. Which is just an awesome town, and that part of the park doesn't get visited a lot. Most of the people are going to be down where you're talking about, down around Old Faithful and the pools. But that's really the thing to go see. I mean, you know, there's a great book if you're in a sort of a macabre, you know, attitude when you're there that they sell in the bookstore called Death in Yellowstone. And so there's like the Belgian boiling pot. Now, the reason it's called the Belgian boiling pot is a Belgian tourist back in the 19th century fell into it and died.
Ooh.
And so, and one of the other things you'll see, very American, is that signs all over the boiling pot area saying, don't go in the boiling pots. This was part of a settlement a number of years ago with a family in which a child was killed, that basically they didn't feel there was enough signage, so it sort of destroys the look of the place. But that's our society.
Yeah, of course it is. People don't.
And there's always going to be some idiot. There is always going to be some idiot that's going to think, I'm just going to put a finger in, you know. And yeah, well,
I can't even put a finger in.
No.
Oh, come on, you idiot.
Talking,
really?
You're talking. Yeah, oh, yeah. These are boiling. You know, it's like, oh, why don't, I'll tell you what. Just go home. You know. Put some water on the boil.
Yeah.
Let it get really, really hot, and then stick your finger in, and it's pretty well, you know, close enough experience.
Gary Warner, thanks for the advice.
All right.
National
thanks,
Parks. And we'll,
have a great time.
Yeah, you. All right. Thank you.
This is an awesome choice. Great choice this time of year and
look
on.
Look at you, Brooke.
I'm so excited.
Ready for vacation.
One of the secret national parks.
All right.
Hey,
well,
Bill,
yeah.
Take care. I'll see you next week, okay?
All right, Gary. Take care. You too. See you later.
Bye.
All right. Up next, what did the landscaper intentionally run over with his riding mower? That and are couples who drink and get drunk together actually happier? Those stories and more in the final segment of this program next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Oh, a good show today. We've had so many friends come and go. Brooke just took off. She's got to prepare for her trip. She's not leaving for another 3 days, but trust me, you have to pack. And, of course, Katie Clark was here, and she's having open-heart surgery. Young lady having surgery to repair her mitral valve, which won't shut, in her heart. So when she has that and she's successful, we'll have her back to tell you all about it. And our newest friend is Jeff Kowalczyk. He's here in the studio with us right now. Jeff, you've been very good, and you've sat there politely. We're going to hear some of your stories in a minute. But first, I want to tell you about this landscaper guy. Normally, we think of this guy as a stupid criminal, but actually, it sounds like he's just a terrible human being, and he just decided to take this to a new level. He's a 24-year-old guy named Jason. Jason Scott Falbo II. And where's he from? Any guesses what state he's from? Yes, Florida. Of course, he's from West Palm Beach. He pleaded guilty to domestic battery last week. He flipped out when his girlfriend wouldn't tell him who she was texting recently. Mm. And so what did he do? He tried to strangle her. Okay, fine. But that's not the end of the story. He was also in court facing animal cruelty charges because back in May, he started working for a landscaping company.
Mm-hmm.
And on his first day, he intentionally ran over 9 ducklings with a riding mower.
They were in his way.
Yeah, apparently, yes.
Oh, geez,
that's the
terrible
way he dealt with it. The mother and 2 other ducklings survived because the guys whose lawn it was stopped him before he made another pass.
Wow.
The guy and his 7-year-old son were actually watching through the window when all of this happened.
Take photos.
Yeah. Falbo claims it was an accident, but the guy and his son say he was smiling and laughing when he confronted him.
Maybe he was getting dinner ready or something.
He had a great time. He pleaded guilty, 9 counts of animal cruelty, and the judge sentenced him to a year in prison and 3 years probation in community service. He's also to start seeing a psychiatrist and says he plans to be a, quote, pillar of the community when he gets out.
He's going to get a job at a chicken farm right here.
Yeah, right. He wants to work on the killing floor.
Ugh.
You know, he wants to be the guy with the mallet at the... all right, fine.
It might fit him.
Yeah, it just might. Okay, so back to you, Jeff. While we're talking about cute little animals, there was a cat. I don't know if this cat had its own Instagram page or what, but it was a fatty, huh?
41-pounder.
That's a big cat.
That is big.
Because what's the average weight of a cat? Somewhere 9 to 12 pounds,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think somewhere around the 10, 12. Yeah.
41 pounds.
That's a big boy.
Yeah,
girl,
that's
sure.
A lot of friskies.
Yeah, he was dubbed skinny, and he lost more than half his weight to become the darling of a Texas vet clinic. They say she was adopted, it was a she, in 2013, and slimmed down to 19 pounds with the help of exercise and a special diet, which they don't squeal.
What kind of exercise?
Toss it in the air? I don't know. You can't get it to
aerobics?
Run.
Aerobics? Cat aerobics?
Maybe a, you know.
Treadmill?
Treadmill? That's the only thing I can think a cat might do.
Follow the catnip? Yes. I don't know.
Eating better? I don't know. That's a special diet.
Yeah, cat Zumba. That's great.
Back to canned food instead of table scraps? I'm not sure.
Well, yeah. Well, the cats, they're like dogs. They'll eat anything. They tend to be a little more finicky, but if you hold out a chunk of fish or some egg or some avocado or whatever it is that you've got, cats will eat it, right?
I think so.
Yeah. All the fatty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good for skinny. And hopefully Skinny can keep her girly figure down to 19 pounds and maybe less.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, you've got some other news for us. And New York Magazine has an interesting cover this issue. And what is it that they have on there?
It was real interesting because the cover shows 35 of Bill Cosby's accusers on their cover of New York Magazine.
They're all together posing?
They look like snapshots, just individual small shots of them all gracing the whole cover.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of interesting.
35, and that's more than enough to fill up the page.
And then I heard there was a blank one, but you might know a little
bit. Blank because they're holding out the hope
more.
That there might be other women who haven't come forward yet, that they will add them to, they'll addendum the photos later.
Oh, that was pretty interesting, though, I thought. It was kind of not the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue I'm used to seeing.
No, you're not. And not the one that Bill Cosby's accustomed to seeing either. According to a study from the State University of New York in Buffalo, drunk couples are happier.
I'll drink to that.
Well, they're drunk. You know, unless you're one of the, well, you go through the happy stage when you're drunk, and then you go through that depressed, everybody's crying stage, and then you snap out of it, and then you turn into an angry drunk, right?
Start pushing everybody around.
So at the end of the study, all the drunks were still in the happy stage. So that's what they concluded. A professor there of health behavior has been studying the behavior and satisfaction of couples for 10 years. He wanted to see if drinking and smoking caused problems in relationships over time, or if it was the difference in the amount of drinking or smoking between a husband and wife that caused problems. And so they had 600 couples answer questions before their wedding, then a year later, then 2 years, 4 years, 7 years. And not surprisingly, all couples saw their satisfaction go down somewhat over the years, no matter what their vices were.
Huh.
So there's the bummer about relationships, right? And yeah, drinking and smoking can add a lot of strain to a marriage, but couples with different habits at different levels were more likely to feel dissatisfaction. In other words, couples who both drank and smoked were more likely to be happy with their marriage, and they were even more likely to be happy if it was at the same level. Also, the satisfaction was higher when it came to alcohol compared to smoking. So if you're married and you're the wife and the hubby's out there drinking all the time, and he comes home drunk, and join him. Otherwise, you're not going to be happy.
Can't
I think that's
him,
what we learned from this.
I think so.
Yeah. All right. And not surprising, by the way, one of the factors in their happiness was when they get drunk, they tend to get hot for each other's bones.
If it works, why fix it?
Yeah. Right. Now, performance, they didn't study that.
Who fell asleep first?
Yeah, right, exactly. Now, the carnies over at the Orange County Fair here in Southern California probably wished they were asleep and just having a dream, but it turned out it was reality. When what happened over there at the basketball hoops game?
Yeah, over at the OC Fair. If you ever wondered what would happen if an NBA player took on a carnival basketball game, well, former NBA All-Star Gilbert Arenas is the guy to answer that question Sunday. He won so many prizes at the OC Fair that the volunteers wouldn't allow him to continue playing. Go figure.
He hit his max for the day, right?
Yeah, and I didn't know what the max was, so that was kind of interesting. You're allowed to win, I think it is one a day per booth, but there's 15 booths, so they can't cut you off from all of them. So apparently he won the max on several of them because the photo shows him with his four little girls, and I can't really count how many he has there, but it's quite a bit.
Yeah, how about that? All right, well, that would have been fun. And do they still call them Kewpie dolls? In fact, what is a Kewpie doll? Do you have any idea?
I never knew. I heard about it all my life, and I just assumed...
it doesn't sound cute.
Sounds like a cheap little carnival ride, actually, but I'm not sure. I'm not riding a doll.
Yeah. All right. Good.
Do you know?
No, I don't know.
I thought you were going to tell us.
And where are carnies bred? Apparently, there's a whole secret society of carnies, and they appear at the fair and other places.
You have to pass a test and stuff and go through training?
Yeah.
Well, that's scary. I don't want to ask.
Guy in San Diego tried to take a selfie with a rattlesnake. Earlier this month, not surprisingly, it bit him, and he ended up in the hospital for almost a week. Two different hospitals had to use all sorts of anti-venom to save his life, and he ended up with a bill of more than $153,000. And so what we learned from this is that there's ways to take selfies and ways to not. So we have some tips for taking better selfies. First of all, let's add one. Don't take one with a rattlesnake.
Good one.
Keep your phone at arm's length, but don't strain. Obviously, you should stretch your arm far enough to get the phone away from your face so that it doesn't distort your features, right?
Ask
someone to help. Never heard of that before, but it's okay to ask another person to help steady the camera or, in fact, maybe even hold it. That's old school, isn't it? Choose your background wisely. Don't pose in front of something like a branch that looks like it's coming out of the side of your head. Watch out for photo bombers. You've done that, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I mean, no.
And in famous settings, move to the side so you get the scenery in as well. Here's a tip. Actually, look at the camera. See, I always thought that maybe you look away during a selfie and it looks better. But they say look at the camera. You don't want a shot of the inside of your nose or your forehead looking huge.
So no down?
No down. Angles. And let's see, there's a list of all the places where selfie sticks are banned at canibringmyselfiestick.com. There's a tip.
Ah, didn't know they had a site up yet.
For example, you can bring a selfie stick to Alcatraz, but you cannot take a selfie stick to Disneyland.
You got to get that shot of you. It looks like you're in the cell, you know, when you're walking by.
Yeah. Hey, you know, all the people that take selfies with cadavers and all this sort of thing, that's no sense, basically. So if you take selfies, have some sense. How about that?
Good idea.
Jeff, nicely done. We love not only your comments, but your comments. If you'd like to click on contact at philhewlettandfriends.com. We're on Twitter at FAF Show, PHAF, like Phil Hewlett and Friends, show. Facebook.com/Phil Hewlett and Friends. Hey, if you listen on iTunes, leave us a comment and a review. Thanks. Leave us a voicemail. Look for the view tab, the blue tab, that is, at the website. Click on it. If you have a microphone on your computer, go ahead and talk. It's free. It's really free. It's not internet free. It's absolutely free. We might play your voicemail on the show. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, producer, Brooke Peterson, our production assistant, Ryan Hayden, our assistant in training, Adam Thompson, theme song composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Brooke, for Jeff, for Katie, and all of the friends, I'm Phil Hewlett. Can't wait to talk with you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.